From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Sometimes tragedy gives birth to social change. 6 years ago, Ethan Saylor, a young man with Down syndrome, died in an encounter with law enforcement. Could adequate training have changed that outcome? Ethan's mother, Patty Saylor, thinks so. She tells us about officer training designed to help contacts with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, or IDDs. And we meet Lisa Shanebrook, a Loyola professor coaching people with IDDs to perform reality scenarios for the trainings, and Patrick Cheney, an actor with autism.
I'm actually giving back to the community, and that's not exactly an opportunity that people with IDDs can usually have. It is not every day that somebody with an IDD has a chance to change the world.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. On January 12, 2013, an encounter with law enforcement at a movie theater in Frederick County turned fatal for Ethan Saylor. He was just 26. He had Down syndrome. Since his death, Saylor's family has worked relentlessly on his behalf, advocating for better police training. Their diligence resulted in a statewide curriculum designed for first responders in situations involving people with intellectual or developmental disabilities. Here to tell us more about what's happened and what has come of it is Patty Saylor, Ethan's mother. Welcome, Patty.
Hi.
And also with us is Lisa Shanebrook, professor and chair of the Department of Speech-Language Hearing Sciences at Loyola University of Maryland. She co-created interactive reality segments for the law enforcement curriculum. Later in the show, we'll meet one of the reality scenario actors. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you.
Patty, it's been 6 years since you lost Ethan. I'm so sorry. We'll all understand why this training is important if you'd walk us through what happened in that movie theater.
Well, it was just a typical Saturday, and Ethan and his staff person went to see a movie in our local theater, and he enjoyed it very much. And, you know, they walked out of the theater to leave, and he decided once he was outside the theater that he wanted to stay and watch it a second time. So he proceeded to walk back in. His staff at that point gave me a call to ask what she should do.
Let me just interrupt. His staff at that point, he had a caretaker who stayed with him?
He had support staff because Ethan didn't drive or handle his own money.
Okay.
So in order for him to go and do things and, you know, wherever, whatever he wanted to do, he'd had a support staff that took him places and did things with him.
Okay. So I interrupted you. You said he walked back in and...
So she gave me a call and I just said, you know, just, you know, wait him out. He'll probably decide either to watch it again or come home. And I said, you can, you know, go get the car and come back. And, you know, if he sees the car, he's likely to get in it. So there's a whole lot more to the nuances of what happened in those moments. But long story short, he walked back in and she brought the car around. She saw that he was walking in. So she double parked the car and went into the theater as well. He proceeded to go straight back to where he was sitting the first time, and he did encounter the manager. And the manager, of course, said, you need to have a ticket. And Ethan said, I don't have one. And, you know, he directed him to the kiosk to get a ticket. And he proceeded to go right into the viewing theater in the same seat he had sat in for the first showing. During that time period, the manager was just walking through the theater and encountered the security who were off-duty sheriff deputies. And just by happenstance, he didn't go seeking them out. By happenstance, he runs into them and says, oh, by the way, there's a man in that viewing theater who does not have a ticket. So the staff interacted with the law enforcement officers, let them know that I was on my way. Ethan had Down syndrome. Please don't touch him because he'll get upset. He'll get, you know, he'll get afraid. He'll get upset. Let me go in. I can talk him into leaving or we'll stay. The officers did not allow her to go into the viewing area. And so the officers went in and approached him nicely, but through a series of, you know, demands. They just kind of upped their demands to the point that you need to leave or you'll be arrested. and Ethan didn't budge. And so they laid hands on him and literally drug him out of his seat. And with that, we'll never quite know how he ended up on the ground face down, but he did, being handcuffed. And during that interaction at that point in time, he suffocated. He died on the floor of the movie theater with three law enforcement officers on him. So his death was ruled a homicide, and the cause of death was asphyxiation.
Within months, nearly 400,000 people signed a petition calling for an investigation, and then Governor Martin O'Malley responded to that by creating the Maryland Commission for Effective Community Inclusion of Individuals with Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities, which is a big mouthful.
Yes, it is.
What did the commission do?
My daughter had started a change.org petition that garnered almost 400,000 signatures. So we delivered paper copies of those petition of the signatures to the governor. And with that, he agreed to meet with my family. And I think at that point, you know, he was not inclined to do anything until he met with us. And he understood that Ethan was the center of our life. And this was really something that was completely avoidable, and we needed to do something about it. And what he did was this executive order that established the commission to make recommendations as to how to go forward. What could we do in the state of Maryland to decrease the risk of this happening again? So for two solid years, they worked at listening sessions, going around the state, finding out what is the breadth of this problem, what do people want done, what is happening out there. We worked in committees to develop curriculum, to, you know, figure out the best course of action. The police were wonderful during this process. Once they understood that people with disabilities had a voice and had something worth listening to, they really, that we could see the light bulbs going off in their minds that, yes, in fact, they wouldn't be interested in hearing from people with disabilities themselves. Let me back up to the very beginning before the commission. There was a small group of people that came together to demand change. And we developed several non-negotiables out of our work, and that was the Ethan Saylor work group. And that was that there would be mandatory training, it would be cross-disability, and it would include people with disabilities having an integral, meaningful voice in all training. And those were non-negotiables. So the commission picked up on those very same values and felt that any training of law enforcement needed to be mandatory, include people with disabilities in a meaningful role, and then the Police Training Commission, which in fact makes the training mandatory for all new cadets and in the academies across the state, and then on a triennial basis every 3 years for officers that are already in service.
This is police officers. Does it also include sheriff's deputies?
Yes. Anybody that that is in law enforcement across the state has the same training requirements set forth by their own training commission. So that would be any sworn officer. So the second part of the commission looked at our commitment that self-advocates, being people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, have meaningful roles in that training, because we know the value that a person with a disability can contribute. But we also realized that there was no body of people with disabilities trained or prepared to do this, to take this role. So we needed to see how to build the capacity of the people with disabilities who are interested in this line of work to actually fill this role. If we were going to say, you know, people with disabilities need to be in all these trainings, we're talking about a massive amount of training hours. So what we did go forth with, the recommendation of the commission, was the establishment of the Ethan Saylor Alliance for Self-Advocates as Educators. And we were fortunate enough to have that legislation passed in a year where very little was being passed. So we were told at that time, you know, be patient, nothing's going to happen, everything's really at a standstill in Annapolis. And I said, no, my son's dead. They will hear me. I will sit in their offices. I will walk the halls. So I religiously went down every single day, and I just walked through offices and hallways and sat in people's waiting room until they'd speak to me. But he was gone. This is the only thing I could do. I had to stand up for him. And so I did. And we got the attention of legislators. Several sponsored the bill, and other people signed on to it. And we gave testimony, and lo and behold, it passed. So it established the Ethan Saylor Alliance as part of the Department of Disability. So it is in our state government. It is a very small piece, but the alliance exists to build the capacity of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to fill these training roles, not just training for law enforcement. That's where it's starting because of it's emanating out of Ethan's death. But the training can be anyone, you know, people in transportation, business people, whatever. So again, it'll exist to build the capacity of the self-advocate.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Patty Saylor of the Ethan Saylor Alliance. Her son, Ethan Saylor, who had Down syndrome, died 6 years ago after an interaction with law enforcement officers. Lisa Shanebro, chair of Loyola Maryland's Speech-Language Hearing Sciences Department, is also here. We're talking about training for first responders to improve their encounters with people with disabilities. Lisa, your involvement began after the mandate for inclusion of people with disabilities in the training. How did you go about creating the curriculum?
Well, we created the curriculum by trying to think of how the self-advocate educators, as we refer to them, would be able to interact with police officers in a situation that is a role play situation. We knew that we had to develop scenarios that were realistic and that also that the self-advocate educators would be able to have a role in that and know what to do. So my colleague and I, when we first thought about how we would go about doing this, we thought about developing scripts for these scenarios that we developed. But then we quickly realized that you can't do that when you're in a training situation and you're actually trying to role play with the police officers. So we began to research a little bit and found out that improvisation or using improv was the best way to go about this.
As someone who speaks into microphones for a living, I'm in awe of improv because I know how easy it is to get balled up and not actually, my brain not following my mouth or vice versa. I mean, improv strikes me as hard.
Yes, it is. And yet, I have to tell you that every time that we would interact and have the self-advocate educators together, that they would do this fantastic job of acting out whatever it was we had them do. So as a training exercise, one of the things we had them do was come into an imaginary door, and they could make their door whatever it was they wanted to be. And when they entered through the door, they became the self-advocate educator or the actor so that they understood that what they were doing was acting in a situation, and this was not necessarily how they would be acting all the time. And that was very important because some of the role play situations are intense and a little bit difficult and not the way that they would normally act with a police officer. And we had a lot of discussion about that.
Well, briefly walk us through what the officers experience during a training.
What happens is they come in and the self-advocate educators will sit amongst the police officers, so not segregated from them, but amongst them as if they're right in the classroom with them. And then there is a piece of the training that is a lecture style where they're reviewing some of the communication behaviors and characteristics of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And then after that, we have a time where they can socialize a little bit with the self-advocate educators and the police officers. And then we go into the role play. And we have three role play situations that we've developed where the police officers interact with these individuals in these scenarios. And after these are done, we talk about them. We talk to the police officers about their role and how they manage the situation. And then we also ask the self-advocate educators how they felt about the police officers when they were engaged in these situations.
What has been the feedback from officers?
The feedback has been very, very positive. They feel like this type of training has helped them gain a lot of knowledge, particularly in how they would communicate with individuals and how they would persevere in being able to get information in the best way so that they could help that person with the intellectual disability. They also have been able to see that they need to look at the individual with an intellectual disability as person first and be able to interact, engage with that person as opposed to somebody else in the situation.
Ah, so not to divert and treat that person as if they're not a person.
Absolutely, and as if they're not there or as if they have nothing to contribute to whatever it is that's being asked.
Patty, why is involving people with disabilities in the training important?
Well, we were adamant in all the advocates and individuals that, you know, we don't speak about people or make decisions about people without their input. You know, we don't, most of us don't live the life that a person with an intellectual disability is living. It is only right to have them intimately involved. There's a saying, nothing about us without us. Most people not in the field can understand it if we liken it to having a women's commission or training about women. And we have a group of people in the audience and we bring in a woman and a man says, this is what it looks like. thank you very much. Could you just sit over there? And then the man would proceed to tell people what a woman is like and how to interact with a woman. Now, it's ludicrous when we say it that way because none of us would really do that. We wouldn't put up for it. But it's common with people with disabilities that we talk about them as if they are, they're all the same. And we inadvertently then support stereotypes. So an important nuance here is that during the curriculum, during the training, there is information that is shared by the police trainer. There's statistics and characteristics and communication styles. But the interactions that are happening throughout the hours they're spending together is, in fact, the training. So interacting in those informal ways, socializing together, and then having the role plays teaches the officer much more than they would ever get listening and hearing a PowerPoint presentation about someone. They remember, they tell us they remember the interaction where they might forget the facts they were taught on a screen.
Well, I'm really grateful to you both for telling us about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Patty Saylor, the mother of Ethan Saylor, a young man with Down syndrome who died after an encounter with off-duty sheriff's deputies, and the namesake of the Ethan Saylor Alliance. That organization is dedicated to training first responders to improve their encounters with people who have intellectual and developmental disabilities. Lisa Shainbrot, professor and chair of the Department of Speech, Language, Hearing Sciences at Loyola University, Maryland, co-created the reality scenario curriculum. Lisa's going to stay with us during this break, and then we'll meet an actor who participates in the reality scenario training and ask about his experience. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about training first responders in order to improve their interactions when they encounter people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, or IDDs. Earlier, we spoke with Patty Saylor, mother of Ethan Saylor, a young man with Down syndrome who died during an encounter with security personnel. His experience motivated the family to advocate for police training. With us is Lisa Shainbrot. She's professor and chair of the Department of Speech, Language, Hearing Sciences at Loyola University, Maryland. Shainbrot co-created interactive reality segments for the police training. Also joining us is Patrick Cheney, who is an actor with autism and is performing in the reality scenarios. Cheney is also a participant in Best Buddies, Maryland. Welcome, Patrick.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Patrick, how did you get involved in the police training?
So I actually learned through a director of Best Buddies Maryland who had sent out an email to everybody who was involved saying that that Best Buddies was going to partner with this program in order to train police on handling situations involving individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Just briefly, what is Best Buddies Maryland?
Oh, Best Buddies Maryland is a nonprofit organization that allows people with IDDs to improve their social life, look for jobs, learn a bit about self-advocacy.
And what did your training consist of?
We met for 2 days in July and August, was it?
2 days in July and 2 days in August.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so we went over how we would be role-playing and how we would be conducting, like we would be performing in a way that was not what we would be doing. Like it was acting.
You're not playing yourself. You're playing
Right. You're playing the role of someone.
Lisa, describe some of the scenarios performed for the officers in the training.
The first scenario is one where it's a group of individuals with intellectual disabilities that are in a mall. And while they're in the food court, two of the individuals are talking and chatting, and a person comes up to befriend them and start talking with them, who's the thief. And then that person steals the other person's wallet and runs off with that. And so the two individuals who are there are left to tell the person who's with them, their supervisor, that they have had the wallet stolen, and then 911 is called, and then the police are called into the situation. The second scenario is one where it's an individual with high-functioning autism who is involved in video gaming. It's late at night. She's been video gaming all day long, and her mother would like her to get off the video games and, you know, get done with her homework and go to bed. And she doesn't want to, and so she threatens either self-harm or she threatens harm to her mother. And the police are called. The mother is upset, and the police are called to that situation. The third scenario is where a group of individuals are at a group home. Again, there's a non-disabled person, a supervisor, or somebody who's there. And one of the individuals tells another individual, a roommate, that he is going to go out to take a walk in the park, but doesn't tell anybody else. And so it's a situation where it's a missing person for a while until they can figure out, and the police are called, and then eventually that person returns. And so it's gives the police officers a way to interact not only with the people who are worried about where that person is, but also that person when that person returns.
Patrick, which scenarios do you participate in, and what are your roles?
I played the thief in scenario one. And one of the housemates in scenario three.
And what was that like? Did you feel that the police officers were actually interacting with you? And were they paying attention to you, what you were doing?
Well, I had to flee the classroom as part of the scenario, so I can't exactly say much for scenario one, but for scenario three, they were very professional, they were very formal, they were incredibly friendly. It seems like they had the idea down.
What have you liked best about it?
That it's actually a direct impact, that I'm actually giving back to the community. And that's not exactly an opportunity that people with IDDs can usually have, you know? I'm just saying that it is not every day that somebody with an IDD has a chance to change the world. So I really wanted to do this.
That's a lot for us to think about. That's Patrick Cheney, an actor in the reality training scenarios for first responders learning how to better communicate when encountering people with disabilities. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Lisa Shainbrot, professor and chair of speech-language hearing sciences at Loyola University, Maryland. Lisa, what has been the feedback from the role play participants?
Our self-advocate educators?
Mm-hmm.
It's been very positive. Each time that we've done the scenarios, whether it's been in practice or when we've actually been on site with the police trainers, they feel that they are really making a difference and that they're a part of the training and that they are able to educate the police officers things that are the right things to know about people with intellectual disabilities, the positive things to know, and the amount of contributions that they can make in society and in general, particularly in working with them in these role play situations.
Patrick, you told us why this program is important to you. Why do you think this training is important for the officers?
For the officers, it would provide critical information on being able to not only identify individuals with IDD, but also how to negotiate with them. Because I know enough people with IDDs and they are not as quick to comply with people who they think are going to harm them in any way. So it really gives the officers an opportunity to see exactly what they could be dealing with, whereas they could not quite do so in the past. And, well, it might really help with erasing the negative stigma that people with IDDs tend to have around them. That they are, oh, should I say this? That they are not entirely human. Like, they are not the standard. But we are currently working towards eliminating that stigma because it's a stigma, not a standard.
This is real. You've given us a lot to think about. Thank you both.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Patrick Cheney is an actor with autism who helps train police in how to improve their encounters with people with disabilities. Lisa Shainbrot is professor and chair of the Department of Speech-Language Hearing Sciences at Loyola University, Maryland. She co-created the reality scenario training curriculum with Leah Saul. We have more information about the Ethan Saylor Alliance, which advocated for this training, at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. Very glad you're with us. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.